The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, May 2019 edition. So on the cover of this edition is P. Diddy. This is where he opens up his heart. And this article was written by Dream Hampton. So we're going to get into that today. In addition to that, we're going to cover some issues such as the path to power. And if we do have time later on in today's section, we're going to cover major key revenue streams. So let's go ahead and get started. The first issue that we're going to cover is path to power, breaking new ground. Civil engineer Cheryl McKenzie Daniel grew up in the construction biz. Now she's a leader in the field. It's safe to say that most young girls don't spend their weekends walking through construction sites in a hard hat. But Cheryl McKenzie Daniel did. In 1905, her grandfather founded McKenzie and McKenzie Architects and Engineers, which provided the blueprint for her career. Outfit is one of the oldest minority-owned professional design and construction firms in the United States. And when Daniel's mom took the helm after her husband's sudden illness, it became a woman-run construction company too. In time, Daniel would step up to head the family business herself, transforming it to McKenzie and McKenzie. In an industry in which there are still too few women and people of color, the president and CEO shares how she won multi-billion dollar contracts and made her mark. So there is, in this particular article, Essence is going to ask Cheryl McKenzie Daniel some questions and then she'll respond. So the first question that was asked is, tell us about your path in the construction world. And Cheryl's response is, when I was 12, my twin sister and I started going to work on Saturdays with our father, who was an architect and ran the family business. We would trace documents and walk construction sites. When it came time to go to college, my father told us, you can go anywhere you want in the world, but I'm only paying for you to go to Howard University to study architecture. We ended up at Howard, but I didn't want to be an architect. I majored in engineering and went on to get a master's degree in civil engineering. My first job was a civil engineer designing silos for missiles. So why did you decide to leave that industry for the family business? When I was in my early 20s, my father had a massive stroke and my mom had to assume control. She called my boss and told him, my daughter's quitting today. And I did, flying home to Nashville from New York City every week to help her. I'd fly back to New York on weekends, but that schedule was taxing on my marriage. So I decided to start the McKenzie Group, which was initially separate from the family business, but still in the area of construction management. We oversaw plans from design to execution. My company was beginning to get small roles on very large assignments with our contracts totaling $90 million. Eventually, my mom retired and I ended up taking over the original business, shutting down our offices in Alabama and Tennessee and running the whole operation from New York City. How do you navigate being one of the few women of color in the field? I was insulted in my own office recently. A man came in who didn't believe we could handle big tasks. We were doing a joint venture with another construction firm on a new hospital for more than $700 million, and we were responsible for $40 million, or 40% of that. The man said to me, all these joint ventures aren't real. I'm sure the other company is doing all the work. He couldn't believe that minority and women-owned businesses really do work in construction. And yet he was proposing to collaborate on a $25 million project. I turned him down because I knew it would never be a real partnership. You've been part of some major deals like the recent $8 billion JFK Airport Terminal 1 project on which your company is the project manager. What's your secret to securing a contract? Construction is really a sales job first. Snagging contracts and bids is very much relationship driven. People do business with people they know. I learned that I had to forge relationships with the right people to gain business. People know us. They know what we're capable of doing, and they know we have a track record. That's how we nabbed the contract with New York City's MTA Capital Program to provide audits on any construction project that's more than $100 million. What's a typical day like for you? I have a lot of breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings. When I'm in the office, I meet with senior staff and put out fires. I also sign every check. I learned that the hard way. For a time, I was off hands and someone else on my team was determining what got paid and what didn't. That's not always a good idea. If you have your own company, always keep your eye on the finances. Trust but verify. That's how I run things. Any advice for women looking to move up in their careers or strike out on their own? You need to define yourself. Don't let other people define you. If we had let them do that, we would not be where we are today. When you're moving up the ladder, whether you're in a corporation or in your own business, a lot will come your way that can pull you off course. For example, we started out bidding on numerous projects and won several jobs. I could have stayed focused on our core services, but instead I said, no, we can handle it. We can get a bunch of bids. Many of those jobs turned out great, but we had one that could have taken down the entire company. As a result, we went back to the services we did best, and now we are thriving. Before, we were making $100 million a year, but would end up with a loss of, say, $2 million. Now we're doing a little over $50 million in business, but we're earning a profit of $3 million a year. The lesson I took from all that is that you have to stay centered on who you are and play to your strengths. So the next article that we're going to cover is Family Over Everything. Since the untimely passing of his soulmate, Kim Porter, Sean Diddy Combs, and their children have experienced their share of grief and growing pains. In the aftermath, the self-proclaimed bad boy for life has had to learn that his loved ones come first, and he wouldn't have it any other way. The outpouring love and grief following Kim Porter's sudden death last fall surprised even those of us who knew her. On the morning of November 15, 2018, 1 month before her 48th birthday, she didn't wake up. She was a stunning, poised, world-class beauty who lived a glamorous public life. Yet she never considered herself a celebrity. Weeks after her passing from pneumonia, strangers were still posting heartfelt tributes. It felt as if we were mourning royalty. Kim started out as a model whose beauty took her from Columbus, Georgia, to New York City in the early 90s. Sean Diddy Combs, he's also referred to as Puff Daddy, had a crush on her when she was working part-time at Uptown Records. He was an ambitious record man who dreamed of making great music and building a cultural institution. When they fell in love, those of us who knew Puff understood that she was the one. They would turn out a red carpet with what she called their black love. When we got dressed, I couldn't believe anyone could be that beautiful in real life, Puff told in an interview. She was like a gazelle. Like all great women, Kim was complex and known as much for her kindness or for her self-possession. She and best friends Ebony Electra and Nicole Johnson were instrumental in promoting talent like Janelle Monáe under the banner of their company, Three Brown Girls. Kim's small, tight-knit circle of friends sustained her, but it was her four children who were the center of her world. Privately, Kim helped Puff grow into a better man and father. When she began dating him, she was a single mother and insisted that she and her son, with I'll be sure Quincy Brown, came as a package deal. Puff honors that to this day. Years later, he and Kim would welcome their own son, Christian. But Puff also made Kim suffer publicly. Although she grappled with accepting his daughter, Chance, 1 week before the couple's twins, Delilah and Jesse, the pain he caused her never compromised family. The children they shared and Puff's other children, including oldest son, Justin, whom she loved as her own. Now, on the first Mother's Day without Kim, Puff recalls the moment his world was turned upside down and given a new focus. Essence has made a historic and possibly controversial decision to put a man on the cover in celebration of Mother's Day. This isn't so much about you as a single father, but as a tribute to Kim Porter. Her sudden passing affected people in such a profound way. Talk to us about that day, please. It's a testament to who Kim was, how she touched people, the grace and poise she had, the way she changed the room as soon as she entered. She was unforgettable. That day turned my world upside down. 3 days before she passed, she wasn't feeling well. She had the flu. And she sent the kids over to my house so they wouldn't get sick. One night I was checking on her and she was like, "Puffy, take care of my babies." She actually said that to me before she died. That day must have been so hard, just managing the news and making sure you got to your kids before they saw it on social media. I jumped into mommy mode. I sent people in every direction to try to make sure the kids would not hear about it on social media or the news. I had to get to the girls' school and find Quincy, who was on set in Atlanta. Christian was on a plane and I had his phone disconnected so he wouldn't read it on the air. Every time Kim and I talked, it was about the kids. It was what she cared about the most. We check in as friends, of course, but we never had a conversation that didn't include the kids. It was like some superhero. I ain't even gonna lie. On some level, I knew she was training me for this. I knew that I had to be ready to do whatever I was supposed to do if something like this ever happened. There was screaming and crying when I heard the news, of course, but I had to ask myself, what would Kim do? I was scared and I was crying out to God and to her, and almost immediately Kim's voice kicked in and I could hear her saying, "Make sure you take care of my babies." What has life been like for you since? How have you changed as a father, Puffy? Before this, I was a part-time father. You know, my family was always first, but there are countless times when I chose work over everything else. But every day I can hear her telling me to go and spend some time with the kids and make sure everybody's all right, like she would do. I'm just a lot more present and most important now my kids come before anything else in my life. How is the family doing? Kim was about love and all of that she cared about, she gave to us every day. We just came together. It really made me proud that even though I didn't get married, Kim and I, along with the other mothers of my children, raised a great family. We have a great family. The way we're handling it is together, from Sarah, which is Chapman and Chance's mom, to Missa, which is Hilton, Brim, and Justin's mother, and to all of Kim's friends, the grandparents. It takes a village. We're doing really well because her passing has changed us and made us love each other more. I'm happy to say that because at first I really didn't know how we'd be doing. But God is the greatest. And it's because of Kim we're doing this well, because of the way she loved us. We wouldn't be able to love any other way. Her spirit wouldn't let us. Of course, I worry about the girls. One day I asked them, how are they being so strong? They said that in a weird way, their mother had taught them how to deal with death. About 6 years ago, Kim's mother, Sarah Porter, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and we moved her to LA. She passed away about a year and a half later, so the girls saw their mother deal with losing her mother. Now, ironically, they are teaching me how to deal with Kim's passing. On Kim's Instagram page, a few months before she died, she had this beautiful post with all three of your daughters in the ocean, and she wrote about growing into the mother she is and accepting Chance, who is only a few months older than the twins. It was public that she didn't want to meet Chance in the beginning, and she was being honest and open about accepting the kind of family you created. Yeah, that took time right there. The position I put her in, I would have to say that I knew I had hurt her in a deep way. That betrayal really affected Kim. There are days I didn't know if we'd ever be okay. Days I thought I may have lost my best friend. The healing took time. But at the end of the day, she couldn't deny who she was, which is a loving person. She knew how important it was that we all get together and become one family. She never wanted separate family units. She didn't want it like that, and I didn't want it like that. It was a lot for Kim to put away the way she felt about what I did and become the leader of this unconventional family. I remember you posting that people will never understand what you two had. What do you mean? Can you say more about that? Yeah, there are levels and dimensions to love, especially love between a man and a woman. There is this place that almost goes beyond friendship. It's where two people actually feel a level of responsibility to love each other forever. There was total trust. It went beyond us being involved intimately or in a traditional relationship. It really felt like the pure definition of unconditional love. But it was even a little deeper than that. Whenever I was around her, I felt as though God had his hand in it. I always felt like God had sent her. Nobody could love me the way she loved me, especially, as you know, as crazy as I acted. I mean, she loved me through some real stuff. She loved me through all of my, what is it called, philandering. Yeah, that would be the word. Yeah, she loved me through all the bull and kept her head up. Not for one second did she stop loving me. She never stopped, and the love I had for her was equal. When I was preparing for this conversation, I looked back at notes from the book we were working on in 2000, and I remember you talking about Kim. It was after Jennifer Lopez, and you were saying that you could never stop being with Kim, and that was a big part of why your relationship with Jen broke up. Knowing you since you were 20, I know how hard you've sometimes tried to love. I understand what you're saying about her loving you unconditionally, but what about you? Did you ever feel like I keep trying and falling and messing up at love? Do you have regrets about anything that happened in your relationship with Kim? No, I don't have regrets. On social media, somebody commented, "You should have married her," and I replied, "I played myself. I wasn't being all the way honest with my love for her to myself and even to other people I was in relationships with. But I don't have any regrets about how things went. They went the way God wanted them to go. But I was playing with love, and it's not really to be played with. I definitely took for granted that Kim would just be with me forever. I never thought something like this could happen. The girls are at such a pivotal age. They're about to come into their teenage years. I know that you have your mom, and of course, you still have Missa and Sarah, and the twins also have Kim's father. And I'm so happy to hear her friends are close, because Kim's friendship circle was so tight. But now you have to raise two young women without their mother. Do you have a plan for this, or are you over there freestyling? I was really concerned about that, so I went to different women and asked them, what can I do to be the best father I can be to my girls? They all told me, number one is to listen, to make sure that the girls can speak to me about anything, that they know and trust that I'll really listen and won't judge them. They also told me I can't be controlling. That's good advice. If you try to control, it's going to push them further away. I wouldn't say I'm freestyling. I would say I'm putting it to work to fill shoes that are almost impossible to fill. I don't think that a man can actually ever fill the shoes that a mother fills. So knowing that, I'm trying to step into the mommy-daddy role and accept help with Quincy, Christian, Justin, Chance, Jesse, and Delilah. They all need different things from me. I'm having real conversations with my kids that I never would have had before, and I'm getting to know them in a deeper way. My last question is about Mother's Day. Since it's their first time, the children's first time without Kim, for a lot of people, you have been an inspiration for how to be a father to a blended family. Your Mother's Day posts are kind of epic. You literally give all your children's mothers respect and love. I'm sure other people are watching and they see how it can be done. The truth is, Mother's Day has really hurt this year. We're definitely celebrating all the mothers. We're not getting in the way of that. But honestly, anybody who's lost a mother or lost a soulmate knows it takes time. They say time heals all wounds. But when it comes to your mother or mothers, I don't think that's the case. And that's not a negative thing, because as people, we need wounds. Sometimes we need the open wounds of life we don't have or make the same mistakes again. I'm so sorry, Puff. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to think of something. To be honest, I really don't know what I'm going to do. You're doing so good. This hurts so much. I know people want to hear the good stuff. I know in the end, the story will be positive, that the family will be okay, but it hurts. There isn't a way around that. I want this article to have a happy ending. It doesn't have to have a happy ending. This is where you're at. I wanted to do this because I wanted everybody to know how special all mothers are. I don't think anybody can ever understand how hard it is to be a black mother. When it comes to who are the strongest beings on the face of the earth, it would have to be black mothers. That's a good place to end, Puff. It's unfair what happened to Kim. It's unfair to her children, to her friends, and to you. And it's okay for you to feel the way that you feel and to express, to show this part. Thank you for trusting me with this. You're in my prayers all the time. All right. Thank you. Happy Mother's Day to you all. Love. And this beautiful article was written by Dream Hampton. She's an award-winning filmmaker and writer for Detroit. So moving on to another article. A word. So in the room where it happens, media might be ever-changing, but for Gayle King, one thing stays constant, telling the truth. Veteran journalist and CBS This Morning co-host Gayle King knows a lot about getting the story. Her hour-long primetime interview with singer and accused sex abuser R. Kelly this past March garnered high ratings. Of note was King's calm demeanor in the face of Kelly's volatile eruption, a welcome refutation of a tired gender stereotype. She got the story, of course, and whether she's reporting on Trayvon Martin or child abuse at the Texas border, her approach never feels heavy-handed. Instead, King's appeal lies in a ground relatably and natural curiosity tempered by 40 years in the broadcast journalism game. Though celebrity hissy fits and fake news accusations, she remains undeterred. I will never believe truth has lost its power, King says. Listen, these are very dicey times, but you just have to keep telling the truth. Below, King stresses the importance of putting yourself in the position to do just that. I know the power of storytelling. To me, it means being where the decision making happens, this is something I feel really strong about. You have to figure out a way to have a seat at the table so that your voice is heard. I know there have been several times at CVS when my speaking up made the difference in a story. I remember being in a meeting when the Trayvon Martin case happened. It was this terrible story in Florida. This kid, 17 years old, went to get some Skittles and iced tea, and he lost his life. And I said, wait a minute, he's what? 17? And what was happening? They said, yeah, but it's a local story. I looked at that story and I said, this is not a local story. This is outrageous. What has happened? I'm more sensitive to know it or to it, I know, because I'm a woman of color in the room. And I think because my opinion is respected, people are willing to say, let's take another look at it, which they did. I believe we ended up being the first national news organization to cover that story. Everything is determined by ratings, and it didn't rate well. I was told, see, your little story didn't do well in the ratings. People don't care. I said, well, sometimes it's our responsibility to take or to make them care. Sometimes that's our responsibility as journalists. And you see what happened with Trayvon Martin? That turned into a huge national conversation that still resonates today. Now, I'm certainly not taking credit for that because everybody started telling that story. But I know that my being in that room that day made a difference. That's the difference of power, that people look at you and think, well, they're doing it. Maybe we should do it too. One of my favorite quotes comes from Nina Shaw. She's a mama jama lawyer in Hollywood. She says, if you want to be a woman in power, then empower other women. Drop the microphone, Miss Nina, because that is so true. Women, people of color, we come to the table with different sensibilities, and we all need to contribute to the conversation. My grandmother used to say, with great power comes great responsibility. And I take my responsibility as a journalist very seriously. I go to work every day, thrilled to be there. Even on the days I'm tired, I still think it's a schedule or a great schedule, but it's a great job. Look at what we get to do. It's a privilege and an honor. So enjoy it. And I think we're going to stop on that note from that word from Gail King, because we've run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.